Hello and welcome to Hunt the Critic, a 12th Pier Productions program. I'm Michael L. Roberts, and we're joined tonight, as usual, by Samuel Hunt. It's been a while, and so this evening we're here to discuss two films, Manchester by the Sea and La La Land, described by Samuel as a veritable chalk and cheese. First up, then, here's your trailer taste of Manchester by the Sea.
If you could take one guy to an island with you and you knew you'd be safe because he was the best man, he was going to keep you happy, if it was between me and your father, who would you take?
My daddy.
I didn't think you're wrong about that.
Hello, this is Lee.
What happened to my brother?
So that's Lee Lee Chandler.
I don't understand.
Which part are you having trouble with?
Well, I can't be his guardian.
Well, your brother provided for your nephew's upkeep. I think the idea was that you would relocate.
Relocate to where?
Well, if you look, it was my impression that you'd spent a lot of time here.
I swear. I'm just a backup.
Lee, nobody can appreciate what you've been through. And if you really feel you can't take this on, you know, that's your right.
Samuel, over to you.
So, post-Christmas, I was really looking forward to seeing La La Land, and I had a friend who was coming to stay with me, and I really wanted to see La La Land, and he really wanted to see Manchester by the Sea, and we literally couldn't decide over, you know, we couldn't agree, because he was adamant that this was going to be good, and I was adamant that this was going to be good, so we decided to settle it over a game of darts, and we played 501, and I was on double 20, yeah, and I missed it by an absolute fraction. And I was absolutely furious with myself. And he won. And so I was, you know, thinking about that afterwards. And then I started looking at the synopsis for Manchester by the Sea. And I looked at the trailer and I thought, actually, you know, I really like Casey Affleck's past work. And I really like what this director's done in the past. He did You Can Count on Me, which was really well received. Right. And a really good film. So I thought, let's give it a chance. I know it's going to be long. I know it's going to be fairly drawn out. But, you know, those films can be really good, especially if they grip you emotionally. Sometimes you find that the length is actually a blessing rather than a curse. So I went into it with a very open mind. The film is up for numerous awards. I mean, it's up for Best Director, Best Film. Casey Affleck is nominated for Best Actor for his work in it. This is a guy who's had sort of ups and downs in his career. You know, he was in films like The Last Kiss, where actually that was a terrible film, but, you know, he was actually very good in it, you know, and often critics have singled out his performance in bad films and said, this is actually a guy who can act, you know, and he's one to watch for the future.
This is Ben Affleck's brother.
Yes. Ben Affleck's brother, yeah. So he's always been in his brother's shadow, but I actually think he's a better actor than Ben Affleck,
right?
Which is quite a big claim, but... Yeah, this is definitely the high watermark of his career. I mean, as I said, he's up for Best Actor Academy Award. So anyway, I kind of thought I knew what I was going to get with Manchester by the Sea. But, you know, I had an open mind. So the story is Casey Affleck plays a janitor who lives in Boston, and he gets word that his brother has died of a heart attack. So he goes over to his ex-hometown, which is Manchester. That's why it's Manchester by the Sea. And... He finds himself having to arrange his brother's funeral, you know, and it turns out that his brother's son, his nephew, he's actually been left in the custody of Casey Affleck. Mm. So Casey Affleck is now responsible for his brother's son, which is a responsibility that he doesn't want because he's this janitor in Boston. And for some reason, which is not concluded until about 60, 90 minutes into the film, he has this massive weight weighing on him, and he walks around completely gaunt. He shows no emotion towards anything. He's almost like, you know, a walking zombie. And what you get the sense is that he's haunted from something that happened in his past. Yeah, so there's something haunting him that's terrible that means he's just emotionally barren character who doesn't really engage with people, and just walks around like he's, you know, been in the pub for the last 5 days. So what happens is it starts to come out what happened to him, you know, in his past to make him be this way. And then the film just basically plays out with him looking after his nephew and, you know, just basically working on this relationship with his nephew that he didn't have before. Okay, so the problem that I had with it was that because what's happened to him in his past was so terrible, what his reaction has been was to make his basically make himself completely emotionless. There's a scene between him and Michelle Williams, who's plays supporting actress, where she's saying, "Look, I'm really sorry for, you know, what happened in the past," and he says, "You know, don't even mention it. There's nothing there. Basically, you know, I've completely I've put up a wall, and there's nothing letting me in." And right. the problem with that is that it doesn't, it renders the film, to me, it renders the film completely emotionless. So I don't remember the last time I was this flat in emotion throughout like a movie. I went in there wanting to be gripped by the story, wanting to be gripped by the emotion. And it just, all that I was thinking about for the first 60 minutes was why, you know, what has happened to him that has made him be like this. And all I was thinking about for the next 60 minutes was, why didn't I hit that double 20 at darts so I wouldn't have to sit through this? You know? And that's not good.
I suppose not, no. So the Casey Affleck's lack of emotional signalling in the film was therefore draining the film of emotion for the audience, you're saying?
Yes, but that was clearly a device. I mean, that was clearly what was meant. I mean, it wasn't bad acting. It was really good acting. You know, he carried that burden, clearly, and you could see the suppression of emotion that he seemed to be carrying the whole time. But because there was no counterpoint on screen, there was no like release of that tension ever, you know. So what you kind of expected to happen was you were told about the tragedy that had befallen him when he was, you know, in his past, which I'm not going to reveal because I think it's a major plot point.
Sure, yeah.
And it was the only bit in the film that meant something to me, so I don't want to spoil that part of the film for other people. But rather than when that tension is released, then there's some kind of healing process or some reparation, the film maintains this complete and utter barrenness of emotion throughout. Mm. You know, I didn't particularly like the character of the nephew. I thought he was a bit of a prick, to be honest. He was like, two-timing these girls, and his, you know, Casey Affleck's character wasn't really condemning it, wasn't really saying good lad. It was all...
Right. How old is the nephew?
17.
Right.
I was just thinking, like, which 17-year-olds has this happened to? Because it certainly wasn't me.
I was starting to think about bringing about room comparisons, but now that you say 17, then it's a very different setup. I was imagining the nephew being younger, but
yeah. Well, it's funny you say that because there's an interesting comparison with Room, because in Room, what happens is you have this terrible thing that's happening on screen, you know, in that she's being held captive. But what she does is she creates this alternative universe for her son,
and that's your counterpoint.
And thus shields the viewer from the horror on screen.
Mm.
But what she does is she creates an alternative universe, and that is the universe you live in Room. In this example, and I think there's definitely a comparison to be made, Casey Affleck's character is really tormented by this terrible thing that has happened. But instead of creating something alternative, he just creates nothing. Do you see what I mean? So it's like the alternative is just completely barren.
Yeah.
So what you get as a viewer is you get shielded from that horror because, well, for the first half, you don't know what it is. And then for the second half, it's not really, you know, there's not much dwelling on it. But what you don't get is that lovely alternative and that flip side of the coin. Because on the other side, there's nothing, because the way that he's managed to deal with this is through absolute nothingness.
And so no release.
Yeah. And so there's no release, and so there's no alternative. And people came up to me afterwards and they said, you know, what did you like about it? Was it really depressing? And I said, no, it wasn't really depressing because I wasn't... I never really engaged, you know, he never seemed that depressed about it. He never seemed anything about it. So therefore, I wasn't feeling anything towards it either. Do you know what I mean? The event that happened was shocking, but the reaction seemed so, like, not fitting what had happened that I struggled to find myself getting emotional about it. You know, I didn't hear anyone in the cinema, like, sniffing. My eyes were dry throughout the whole film, you know, and what I wanted is that barrenness to start with and then shifting to something more emotional in the second half, because presumably the logic is that, you know, he's had this terrible thing happen in his past and now he's reconnecting with his nephew. He's moved back to where he was and he's able to start building his life in a way that, you know, means something to him.
The traditional resolution motif.
Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, call me old fashioned, but that's what I was looking for. And I didn't get that, you know. Mm. So it was the main emotion in the film was, you know, a mixture of sort of boredom and just flat emotion. And The thing is, it's not a bad film. If you pick that film apart, you know, like in Room when I said, look, you cut it up and you try and pull the pieces back together, it fits because, you know, it's been thought out to the nth degree. Kenneth Lonergan's been working on this film for 5 years. I mean, this guy, you know, he clearly knows the building blocks. And you take Manchester by the Sea apart and you start looking at all the intricacies of it, and it does stack up. You know, it makes sense as a puzzle. But the reason that I wanted to... with Room, the reason afterwards that I wanted to like spend that time watching the film again and investing in trying to work out what had been going on was because I loved the movie. And in Manchester by the Sea, I just didn't like it. So I didn't really care about going in and finding out. It's like you take Room apart and you build it back up and it looks like The Shard in London. You take Manchester by the Sea apart and it looks like student accommodation in Manchester. You know, no one wants to build that. Sure, someone has to do it, but I don't want to pay £15 and go to the Everyman to see it. Do you see what I mean?
Yes, absolutely, yeah. To what extent does Kenneth Lonergan's background betray that sort of cinematic inexperience?
Well, I think that as a young man, he was traditionally a playwright, and I think that the thing is with Manchester by the Sea, I think he does get the cinematic side to it because it's a very sort of drab and you know, emotionless film, and all the shots are incredibly, you know, incredibly barren and you know, dismal. Mm. But I think it's a good script, but it does play out a bit like a piece of theatre. You know, you have these sort of very ponderous conversations, and I feel slightly like I did about Good Will Hunting, which, and funnily enough, Matt Damon is actually a producer on this film.
On Manchester by the Sea.
I didn't realize that. He's very good friends with Ben Affleck, so he knows Casey Affleck quite well as well. And what I hated Good Will Hunting, because what I thought it was, a film that thought it was being really, really clever and was actually just saying, here's a really clever guy. He's really clever. Just get over it. Now let's look at what's interesting and what we can do. Like, you know, who can this guy humiliate in a bar? And it really didn't explore, like, where he'd got his brains from. And it's like, Matt Damon, math genius, sorry, don't believe it. And
it certainly asks you to accept a lot before it launches on its
narrative.
Yeah, so,
and it was the same. It was like, you know, you got to get over the fact that this guy's really depressed about something. Do you know what I mean? Mm. And, you know, so let's accept that. And now let's see him just be depressed for 2.5 hours. You know, it's not really a movie I want to watch. And also, you know, though they did go into the background of why it was, it's kind of like you're shown it and then you think, oh, okay, that's what it is. Mm. And then you have to watch for another 45 minutes while he doesn't come to any sort of realization or resolution at all.
Yeah, I suppose it's okay to have the exposition later if you're being made to feel that there's some sort of resolution as you experience that exposition of the reasoning rather than it's just to accept this and then it's still this when you walk out of the cinema.
Well, exactly. There's no, you know, films are supposed to take you on a journey and this film just doesn't seem to go anywhere. Mm. So I know it's won a lot of plaudits. I mean, very respected critics have really liked it. And, you know, he may well win Best Actor as well. I do think it's a good performance because, you know, I'm sure what the director said was, you know, you need to be this character throughout the film. And he absolutely personifies that. Mm. But, you know, is it a film I'd watch again? Absolutely not. I mean, I'd rather watch, you know, numerous other films again. And do I think it was worthy of an Oscar? I mean, the Oscars just like people who suffer. You know, look at The Revenant. You know, Leonardo DiCaprio went through the mill for 2.5 hours. You know, there's your Oscar. You know, it wasn't a particularly good film. Here, there's a high chance that he'll win it because that's what they like to see. They like to see people in pain, you know. But at the end of the day, I think cinema should be enjoyable. And I've enjoyed films that have been about terrible things, you know. And this was not one of them.
Just one point of personal interest. I understood from an interview with Ben Affleck that this is the first time two brothers are up for Oscars. Just in your critic's opinion, could you give me a comparison of a Casey Affleck style with a Ben Affleck style? Are there any similarities and what are the important differences?
Well, that's quite a tough question. I think that, as I said before, Ben Affleck obviously is an much bigger films than Casey Affleck has been in. And I think that Ben Affleck panders slightly more to the you know, to the commercial market, you know, Good Will Hunting, he wrote that with Matt Damon, and I thought it was crap. And, you know, he wrote and directed Argo as well, which was actually a really good film. So I liked his directorial work. But
how about the latest Marvel Adventures, Ben Affleck?
I haven't subjected myself to that because I just know that I don't think even Ben Affleck liked that film, because you remember there's that interview
sad Affleck or
something. Where he doesn't really respond to the questions.
He is going to star in a standalone The Batman.
Oh really?
Coming up, yeah, which he was going to direct as well.
Okay.
But then pulled out of the directing because he wanted to give everything to the character.
Oh, Jesus.
But in your opinion, I mean, surely hasn't Christian Bale given enough serious ethos and edge to the Batman franchise?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I can't express enough how dismayed I am that, you know, so much money is thrown at these remakes. Mm. I mean, it's hard to accept. I'm 24, I feel like a young person, that a series like Spider-Man can be remade within my movie-watching lifetime.
Yes,
do you know what I mean? You have Tobey Maguire as Spider-Man, and 10 years later, it's like, oh, we got Andrew Garfield as the amazing... What? that movie came out, like, last year. Do you know what I mean? It turns out it's been about 7 years, but for God's sake, you can't remake something that's only been out 7 years.
Yeah, that was a strange... Like, yeah.
Look at The Great Gatsby. It's like 50 years between, you know...
Redford.
One of the originals and the latest. You can kind of justify that. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
But remaking two superhero films within the space of my lifetime at the age of 24, it's just absolutely ridiculous. And it's such a shame. You know, you've got so much great literature out there. You've got so many great books. You know, look at Room. I mean, that was an original... That was an original text. It was an original screenplay. Look what Lenny Abrahamson did with that. You know, that only cost $6 million. You could make, you know, 8 Rooms, you know, for the price of one Batman. It's just a real shame, to be honest. Mm. So, that's a film I won't be watching. But in terms of the commercial difference between Casey Affleck and Ben Affleck, I mean, Ben Affleck has just been part of more commercial projects. Casey Affleck has a very strange voice. I don't really know how to describe it, but when you hear him talk, he sounds so different to Ben Affleck, and it's very uncinematic voice. It's very soft. It's quite feminine, his voice, and actually it works quite well in this movie because it's very particular. He has a very particular voice, and a lot of critics said early on, like, he would be a massive star if it wasn't for this weird voice that he has. But it lends something specific to the characters that he plays. Mm. I quite like it, but. I would go back into Casey Affleck's back catalogue and I would watch something else, because I can't recommend this film because I didn't enjoy it, you know? And fundamentally, that's, as a critic, you know, that's what it has to come down to. Even if I think it's a good film, and I think it's a good film in the way it's put together, I can't recommend it because I didn't enjoy it. And I go to the cinema to enjoy myself, you know, at the end of the day. Even if I cry, I still enjoy myself. That's the whole point of emotion, isn't it? So... emotionless and, you know, a puzzle that you don't want to put together.